there's all these scenes in the forest.
Oh, so it's like a Joe in the volcano. Like
the moon just gets bigger in every scene. Yeah. It's like a joke.
It's like in my mind, thing is like if the moon was that close to the planet, it would be chaos, like the gravitational pull would be fucked.
Like people would be you had to get into the minutiae.
Yeah, you're like in my mind, I'm thinking like trying to rescue this person would be the least of their concerns.
They're setting up these frames where like Jason Statham is like punching some guy on the ground, right? And he's in the bottom right corner, and then the other 3/4 of the frame are enveloped by a full moon.
Just the moon. Just
that's
the moon.
Not an exaggeration. 3/4 of the frame
he's
are
really
the moon.
Really not exaggerating. Like
that's crazy.
It's fucking
speaking
nuts.
Of which, I want to talk about the Blumhouse Wolfman because nobody saw it.
Did you see it?
No. but it looked like I wanted to see it. And I heard that people's problems with it. Why are you laughing?
They're just like, hold on, let me tell you why I'm enraged right now. No one saw this movie. Did you see it? No, but that's beside the point.
No, I'm not mad that no one saw it. I just want to know why. Like I thought Christopher Abbott is a good character. Like he's a good character actor. What's her name from Ozark? Isn't it?
It's the title.
Blonde.
The title's awful.
Oh, Julia Garner.
Yeah, and it's a universal monster. And
I'm telling you, it's the title.
The Wolfman.
Yeah, because who the fuck for like you know universal characters, right? You have Dracula, the Mummy, yeah. Right? Who had all been established years prior as popular ones. Every other Wolfman movie had a different title. It was Wolf.
Wait, now what's the Benicio one? Isn't that Wolfman?
Yeah, it was
Wolfman.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. Is of all the universal monsters, let's just be honest. The werewolf is the most embarrassing one.
Yeah, it's the worst one.
It's the worst one.
Werewolves always suck. Werewolves aren't a lead character.
No, it's like about puberty and stuff.
Yeah, I know, but that's why it's fucking embarrassing. Like, oh, I'm a monster, I'm puberty. Just the worst.
It's just a bad title, The Wolf.
Name one good, with the exception of American Werewolf in London, name one good werewolf movie.
American Werewolf in Paris.
Oh.
Ginger Snaps.
Ginger Snaps.
All right, Ginger Snaps. Ginger Snaps.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Two. All right.
Have
two.
We seen that movie?
Ginger Snaps?
Didn't we review?
Yeah, we did. Okay, so two. Those are the two good werewolf
literally
movies.
Reviewed a werewolf movie and this dude's talking shit.
I'm just saying, just those two.
I just think it was the title. I'm fine with werewolf movies. I just think it's the title.
Did you say Twilight? Twilight is not a werewolf movie.
There's werewolves in it.
But it's not a werewolf movie. It's a vampire movie.
Are you guys Edward or Team Edward or Team Jacob?
Which one is Jacob?
Jacob is the werewolf.
Okay.
I'm Team Edward.
You're Team Edward? Yeah. You're more of a vampire guy?
I just like Robert Pattinson.
Oh, yeah. He's good.
Yeah.
You see that photo shoot he did recently?
No. What did he do?
Like, it's crazy. I forget what magazine it's for, but he's got crazy blonde hair and like bleach blonde hair. And
he's trying to be Kurt Cobain.
No, he's got all this, like, special effects, plastic surgery looking shit, and he looks like a... It's insane.
Is it for a movie? He's just doing it because he's bored.
It might be for GQ or something. He looks insane.
He's got the good time look, the bleach hair.
No, he's got, like, the fucking sleeping on Hollywood Boulevard look.
So I was right, Kurt Cobain.
Yeah. No. I don't know, I saw Mickey 17, wasn't impressed.
Oh, you know, no, I was gonna maybe watch it.
It's fine. It's fine.
It's okay. There's some funny 3D printer scenes.
Cool. I love a good 3D printer scene.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Class of Nukem High?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, more importantly, Troma
Studios.
Yeah,
I feel like that's what we need to focus in on now.
Troma Studios are just... It's
Idle Hands wasn't quite keeping our attention.
Troma Studios, famously founded by Lloyd Kaufman and Michael Hertz in 1974. Mm-hmm. I think if I had to describe Troma in... one sentence, I would say that they, in much of, actually, you know what, I was reading about Troma, or refreshing my memory about them, and it kind of reminded me of Feeders a little bit.
Sure.
I was like, they are a company that is obsessed with the genre sort of tropes of 1950s sci-fi horror B-movies, and sort of updating them to sort of a lewd 1980s, 90s exploitation level.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're just Lloyd Kaufman is, you know, he's in the same realm or pantheon of like a Roger Corman and Russ Meyer.
Oh, do you mean Lloyd Kaufman, the Yale graduate?
I do know that he went to Yale. Yes, he's a smart fucking guy.
I love his Ivy League drops.
He's a smart fucking degenerate. I love him.
Not only did Kaufman graduate from Yale University in the class of 1968,
he had a famous like,
but he majored in Chinese studies.
No, that's amazing.
And his fellow Yale classmates included Oliver Stone and George W. Bush.
Yes, that's what I was thinking. Yes, I knew he went to George. Yeah, he went to
amazing. Same year.
Yeah, I knew he went to with George Dubb. I went to...
Okay. Really informs his practice, if you ask me.
100%.
Kind of cut from the same... from the same cloth, obviously.
So, the first and only time I've ever been to Comic-Con... By the way, we should go to Comic-Con. I'm just saying.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, no one does, like, radio shows.
Maybe we bring our basement tapes book to Comic-Con.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
The Danzig's banned. You can't go anymore.
What happened?
The fights?
What happened?
He would go every year and pick a fight, and then he got his ass kicked, and then he got banned from
That's true.
You never seen this video?
It's pretty funny. He would just get his ass fucking kicked.
There's a video, he picks a fight with this, like, what I think is at least members of a metal band, if not a full metal band.
Oh my God.
And one of the guys is, like, huge, and he's like, Danzig is not huge.
Danzig is four feet tall.
Yeah.
He's buff, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's not buff enough to take...
6'4".
Yeah.
And as buff as him, and... You see him kind of like poking at the guy and yelling, and then the guy just literally knocks him out.
Wow.
I've seen Danzig now. I feel like he's more wide than buff. Kind of I just feel like he carries a buff stance, but he's just wide.
Yeah. He's
bell shaped.
He's 4 feet tall, is what he is. So, my first and only time I've been to Comic-Con. There was a trauma table, and Lloyd Kaufman was there.
Wow.
And I was there with my girlfriend at the time, and I wanted to get a picture with him, which he was happy to do, but he just kept hitting on my girlfriend the whole fucking time.
Wow, nice. Really?
He's like, you should ditch this guy and hang out with me some more. I was like, I'm a little annoyed, but you're also like...
Respect, yeah.
Yeah, I was kind of like, all right. I mean, she wasn't going to do anything about it, but it was kind of... It was funny slash annoying, but still...
It's on brand.
It is on brand. That's the thing. It's on brand. And I respect him for it.
Well, you know what really helped explain a lot about Lloyd Kaufman to me is, like, so when he graduated from Harvard, he went to work for Canon Films, where he met John, I can never say his name, Avildsen.
Mm-hmm.
You know that director?
Yeah, the Karate Kid.
Yeah, and Rocky. And they collaborated for years. So he, like, made... not only did he work on Rocky, he was like a PA, but he shot some B-roll footage that didn't end up in the film. but they all after that they like actually collaborated and they made two movies together. Him and Avildsen, Joe and Cry Uncle, which were, you know, also Lloyd Kaufman's first films. And then, like, so he goes on and he, like, maintains a lot of these Harvard connections within the film world, which is really odd because there aren't many Harvard alums in the film world. But he works on the lesbian thriller Sugar Cookies with Oliver Stone. And he writes and directs the Israeli comedy flop Big Gus, What's the Fuss?
Wow. That's a great name.
I've never heard of that movie.
But here's how he gets his big break, is that he is a location scout for Saturday Night Fever. And he is the guy who delivers the Odyssey, which is the nightclub where the famous scene happens.
Really?
And so that gives him like a reputation within the industry that he knows what he's doing, because that is maybe the most iconic scene of the 1970s.
Yeah.
And so then he basically from that moment, for some reason, I mean, it's not a huge leap of faith, but like for that reason, he gets really into adult film, right? Like everyone is like, oh, you can make anything sexy. And so, including John Travolta. And so he does like a whole bunch of adult films. He does like almost like a decade worth, 1973 to 1979, and he directs them under a pseudonym, Louis Sue.
Are these straight up porn movies?
Yeah, they're porn.
Like,
yeah.
Okay,
and they're playing like Times Square classic porno movies.
Yeah,
his most famous one is called The Divine Obsession. Anyway. And then he starts Troma Studios in 1974, like smack dab in the middle of that with Michael Hertz, who's been doing like action and comedy films. So he kind of has like a more of a grip on managing a budget. And Kaufman is the creative of the
group. He's the idea man.
Yeah.
One thing I want to point out too is one of these weird, like, kind of side things that he weasels his way into. I don't mean to say weasel.
No, go ahead.
But he is kind of a weasel. He's the production manager on Louis Malle's My Dinner with Andre, which that part always fucking cracks me up.
That's
Lloyd Kaufman has film credits on My Dinner with Andre. Yeah.
And it's not even under a pseudonym. He's straight up in the credits.
That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah. I really love that movie. Yeah. Just saying. It's incredible.
Yeah. Wow. My Dinner with Andre is awesome. I can't.
Pat, have you seen My Dinner with Andre?
I don't think so.
I remember the first time I heard of this movie was it was an episode of The Simpsons, and Martin is at an arcade. There's all these people playing video games, whatever. But Martin is playing the My Dinner with Andre arcade cabinet. And it's literally just like, because My Dinner with Andre is just two intellectuals just talking about just, you know, their business. You know, one of them's a playwright, the other one's a playwright director, and all like a play director. But it's just talking about two driving forces of creativity and what it means to be a creative person in this world and all this. It's great. But it's fantastic.
Who's in it?
It is Wallace Shawn.
AKA famously from The Princess Bride.
Oh. Inconceivable.
Clueless.
He's the person that they try to set up with.
With the other teacher.
Yeah.
So you went with Clueless?
Yeah.
Clueless.
Okay.
It's the only one I could think Wallace of other than Princess Bride.
He's a famous Broadway guy.
Yeah.
So Three Penny Opera.
Yeah. Both of them are. Yeah. They're basically playing slightly exaggerated versions of themselves, and they're just having a conversation.
But it's also the whole play of it is that it's like it's sort of like false documentary, right? Like they're not actually being them true selves.
Yeah,
it's like early 70s.
So Lloyd Kaufman is a person that specifically has been surrounded by great acts of cinema.
Yeah. But also like weirdly great acts of satirical cinema.
Yeah.
Which I think is important for his development.
Well, he's just one of my favorite types of creative entities where he's someone who's clearly like an intellectual.
Yeah.
But he still chooses to just make just absolute garbage. I'm not disparaging it, but I'm just saying like he appreciates, he sees the value
in this
type of expression.
Last question about My Dinner with Andre, because this fucking fascinates me. Was he in the directing adult film era while he was working on
smack dab in the middle?
That's amazing.
Can you imagine just going from like shooting just like a fucking full blown anal scene to then going to seeing two guys discuss like the merits of fucking, you know, Lacan.
Fascinating.
That's a good way to describe Troma to someone who's never heard of it.
Honestly, that's the thing. The genius of Troma is that it's very on the surface gross violence and sex.
Yeah.
But in a lot of other ways, it's really very much like in these like little wonderful little moments, you have great perspectives on like, you know, geopolitical climates and the economic forces that are driving all these fucked up characters to do what they're doing. But it's all under sort of this big giant circus tent of just mania and violence and goo-oos and all that stuff. And that's essentially what I think Lloyd Kaufman, that's the genius of Lloyd Kaufman, is he is a P.T. Barnum, right? Yeah. He's a great intellectual who realizes the actual value and merit in spectacle. Mm-hmm. But spectacle when it's tied to like the bare essentials of human expression, which is sex and violence. And I'm not trying to simplify things, but that's what it is. Like he sees the value and all the gross horrible things that people do to each other, and he sees that this is all, these are all genuine expressions of communication with each other, and in a sense, it's almost like, I don't want to say I want to say infantilizing, but not in a bad way. He's almost like sort of crystallizing all of these horrible things, but still very much at the end of the day, like wrapping a profound idea, like in the center of this gross, disgusting, like diaper filled with pubic hair and teeth.
Well, I think the thing about you saying like P.T. Barnum is like really on point, because like he's definitely very specifically hitting at multiple audiences at once.
Sure.
And like even the same person can view trauma movies like at different points in their lives in different ways. Because I have this very, very specific memory of being like 12 and getting introduced to trauma through shout out USA Up All Night. And
now, for the viewers who don't know, for the uninitiated, what is USA Up All Night?
So USA Up All Night, if you were in the mid-90s, I would say like what? Like maybe like 60, 50, 60, 70% at cable in the house at that point, probably. So USA was like an early cable network, and a lot of the problems with these cable networks was they didn't know what the hell to do with like midnight to 5 a.m., and so USA was like one of the first networks to like, let's do programming late at night for an adult audience. So that would usually be like the really simple things like Silk Stockings and like skin flicks, like Skinamax and stuff like that. So like it wasn't porn, but there was like boobs and comedy and stuff like that. So obviously at 12, I was very into this. And my parents not giving a shit that I had a TV in my room. But USA Up All Night was like this weird thing where they would have adult themed movies, but some of them would be like really fucking cool. Like you'd see a lot of like art house films, and that's how I got introduced with trauma, was Toxic Avenger, Class of Nukem High, Sergeant Kabuki.
Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD.
Sergeant Kabuki Man, NYPD, thank you. Attack of the Killer Condoms, like that stuff. Like, we're all on there. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, like these things that were like referencing older B movies and stuff, which they'd also show.
Yeah.
Which was kind of the interesting part, is that you see like a movie that was literally a B movie, Godzilla movie, monster movie, and then you'd see a movie that was made maybe like in the early, you know, 10 years prior.
Yeah.
It was like this interesting parody.
Like an art house theater.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was
exactly.
Like the TV version of
that. Yeah.
And I love that you brought it up, because the Class of Nukem High actually had one of the longest runs on USA Up All Night.
Yeah. That's where I saw it.
Of any movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it
also turned out to be the highest selling VHS tape for trauma.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? More than Toxic
More
Adventure.
Than Toxie?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, fucking A. Well,
let's take it step by step. 1985, trauma releases The Toxic Avenger. It's a huge hit, and I think opens the door to a lot of this stuff like USA Up All Night, because it goes past the ton of Times Square gritty B-budget market and sort of breaks through into mild mainstream success.
Yeah.
And, you know what? Like, you could even argue, I don't think anyone's ever made this point, but I'm going to, but like, you could even argue that things like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles aren't popular without Toxie.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's raunchy in a way that film could never even come close to.
Yeah.
But there's a reason that Critters is referenced in TMNT.
Yeah.
It's because it, like, that kind of, like, subway, grimy New York style is very much, like, epitomized and laid out by Trauma. Trauma becomes the New York studio.
The Trauma movies were, when they came out, they were a fucking hit. They were, because it was The Troma movies, let's just say, owe a great deal of debt to John Waters. Mm. So the John Waters movies, you know, like, this is the 80s. John Waters is sort of starting
it's like the East Coast.
Yeah. So, like, John Waters is starting to slowly make his way into the mainstream. So someone had to sort of pick up the slack of all this sort of trashy underground punk art house kids who want to make fucked up things because it's the way to be. And Troma basically picked up where John Waters was leaving off. And again, John Waters started in the backwoods and, you know, that sort of rural area. But I think Lloyd Kaufman, I think what John Waters saw in the rural parts of Pennsylvania and Baltimore, Lloyd Kaufman found that same aesthetic, that same spirit and energy in the unhoused and sewers sort of like aesthetic of New York at the time.
And I think that's something that needs to be repeated. I mean, obviously, I don't think we have too many Gen Z viewers in our audience, but like
listeners,
literally, yeah, that too.
There were some there for
our Twitch channel. Yeah, that's true. Today,
so. But sure. New York, the heart of New York, Times Square, was a giant porn theater.
Uh-huh.
I get, like, so the like symbol of New York was like grit, grime, tits.
There was no M&M store in Times Square in 1984. Yeah.
Or not even, I mean, when did the, it was Giuliani, right?
Giuliani cleaned up all that shit. Yeah.
Well, Ed Koch, yeah. Like, so there's Ed Koch is in a Lloyd Kaufman film.
But, which one?
That makes sense. He loved publicity.
Yes, he did. He was in, was he in Kabuki Man?
Yeah, he's in Sergeant Kabuki.
He's in Kabuki Man. Okay.
I'm kind of surprised Giuliani never made it to a Troma film. Definitely cut from the same cloth.
I think Giuliani was universally hated in New York.
For sure.
He was fucking hated in New York.
Was Koch liked?
I think Koch was a character.
Okay.
I'm surprised in, Trump didn't quite make it into a, like, because he was such a,
Trump was too posh for Lloyd Kaufman.
I mean, but even a reference, he was such like a 80s iconic.
I think Trump was also hated by the art house scene.
Well, no, but no, not as like cool, have him come in.
Oh, like have
movie.
Him like lampooned.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there is somewhere in there. But, yeah, I mean, those things, like, Troma was this really unique vision of, like, a rebranding of, like, mid-early 80s, you got, like, Porky's and all these very specific movies, all on USA Up All Night. But, like, they sort of led the charge of, like, this new, like, sexualization in the culture where it was, like, okay to, like, be funny and have, you know, obscene sexuality, you know, not to a porn degree, but like in major movie productions. But then, like, I feel like Kaufman, like, really seized on that moment and, like, saw something in it where it's like, oh, okay, well, it's cool to do that. I can do that. But then also I can, like, twist it even more and, like, play with that whole
idea. I mean,
we'll also be, like, being really... So I think the thing that sets Troma apart from other film studios at the time is, like, they were really... They, from the very start, very explicit about the support of independent filmmakers.
Yeah.
So, like Kaufman has written books, has made documentaries about how it's important to just make things.
Yeah.
And, like, he has never been something that's been, like, sort of a competitive filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So, like, all of the people that sort of passed through Troma, like, you guys would be shocked.
Oh,
like,
I know. Like, we all know.
It's a huge
Oliver
legacy.
Stone, Battle of Love's Return, is an early Troma distributed film.
Mm-hmm.
There's like Paul Sorvino's in Cry Uncle. Kevin Costner's in a movie called Sizzle Beach USA, which is a Troma release. Vincent D'Onofrio's in a movie called The First Turn On in 1983.
Yeah.
Obviously, Toxic Avenger Part 2 has Michael J. White, which launches him into Spawn. Samuel L. Jackson is in a movie called Death by Temptation when they start breaching out into the, like, a more of an African-American
Death by Temptation
film.
By the way, not that good.
No, you know, we wanted to do it on the show, and because I think it's such a it is such an important film for, like, African American horror films, but because of the performances in it, like, they truthfully are good, but the film itself is just not very good.
Oh, it's like it drags.
But it's got great actors.
You can have a trauma movie drag.
Yeah, that's like the thing. That's what it does. It's just fucking weird. Yeah,
and then, of course, like, I think maybe the most famous one that paid Lloyd Kaufman dividends in the end, because he's been in, like, Guardians of the Galaxy and all that stuff.
It's James Gunn.
James Gunn was in Romeo and Juliet. Yeah, yeah.
Well, he wrote Romeo and Juliet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he guest stars in it.
And then you also have, I mean, Trey Parker and Matt Stone were there towards the end.
Right? Yeah.
Cannibal the Musical. Cannibal the Musical came out. Was made before South Park, right? But it wasn't officially released. Or I think it was released, but it really no one paid attention to it because it's okay. It's fine. It's fine.
It's not fine. Great.
But then it got a huge re-release after South Park.
Yeah. Right. They literally put them on the cover.
Basically.
Yeah.
But the studio prides itself on its self-imposed rules of production. Do you guys want to know what that is?
Yes, please.
One, safety to humans. Two, safety to property. Three, written in much smaller font than the first two, make a good movie.
That's pretty good.
I read I forget the name. It was fucking 25 years ago.
Was it? Was it like How the Toxic Avenger? Or
How to Make a Movie.
How to Make a Movie, yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was adapted into a trauma film called Terror Firmer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
Terror Firmer and it
I
is
knew about that book, but I didn't know they made
Terror Firmer is based. So Terror Firmer is Lloyd Kaufman's The Fablemans.
Oh, there's so many.
Yeah, totally. That's a good.
And it's fucking crazy. It's fucking. There's like a scene where Ron Jeremy gets impaled in the head with a crucifix, and then he shits his pants for like. Dude, this literally what happened. No. He gets stabbed in the back of the head with a crucifix. He's like writhing on the floor with the crucifix in his head. And then he just starts spraying diarrhea all over the place. It's incredible. It goes on and on. It's amazing.
Okay, but Newcomb. So do you guys want to talk about this? Because this is kind of like it's their first movie after Toxic Avenger.
And it's surprisingly tame.
Yeah.
Considering how fucking crazy Toxic Avenger is.
It has more of a 50s vibe than Toxic Avenger has.
100%.
Right? Like, it has, like, a Grease kind of, like...
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, like, these are like... and mostly I'm just referring to, like, the main characters, right? Who are, like, the kind of, like, quarterback jock kid.
Mm-hmm. There's the nerds, there's the punks.
Right.
Or the street toughs, whatever the fuck
you want. And also the fact that there's... And, I mean, I know this happens in other trauma movies, but to a degree, but, like, also the fact that there is music, a continuous blast of music the entire time.
From the moment it starts in the trailer sequence, in the intro sequence, it never stops.
It's either the volume's either raised or lowered.
If there was a musical, but everyone forgot to sing.
Which is honestly the best way to experience a musical, because musicals are fucking garbage.
I was just thinking about
all
this.
Of them. Yeah, I like good music.
Yeah.
There are like three good musicals.
They're all old and,
I think musicals is a weird thing, because I was thinking about this recently. There's sort of this weird, I think me and Mitzi are kind of on the same page about this. The musicals that we like are films.
Yeah.
So whereas there are filmed musicals,
right. Yes.
And that's what we're talking about,
right? Yeah.
Like, so I would consider like West Side Story, Oklahoma. To me, those are like filmed musicals,
right? Yeah.
Whereas Singing in the Rain is a film.
Yeah,
right.
It exists as a film first.
Yes,
about filmmaking.
I'm on the same page. No,
Singing in the Rain is phenomenal.
Yeah, great movie.
Like, even after all this time, you're just an absolute. No,
but
awe.
It might be in indicative of why we don't like the other ones. It's like you're almost getting like the second tier experience.
Yeah.
You know? You're you should be seeing this on Broadway.
Right.
But here's like our version. Yeah. That's why like when Wicked came out, everyone's losing their shit about it. I'm like, you're just getting like the second tier version of whatever was on Broadway.
But I think, like, at least with Nukem High, there's something really, like, clever that I like about his use of just constantly keeping this music going the whole time, which is, like, when you're watching whatever, you're watching a musical film, and the music starts, you instantly get this anticipation of, oh, what's about to happen?
Yeah.
And he just keeps it going the whole time. Yeah. So one of my favorite things...
It's like Edgelord.
It's like Edgelord.
Psychotic Edgelord.
Yeah. One of the things I really love about the movie is the pacing. I think the pacing of this movie is so fun. Yeah. It's constantly like a giant party. You move from like one room to the other. Yeah. The music goes down a little bit when you go to another room, and then you go to another room and the music's back up. Yeah. And there's something about that like feeling like the keeping the energy of it, which I think... Yeah. I don't know. I thought I enjoy it.
Adrenaline going, and then it keeps it there for 90 minutes, which makes you feel fucking psychotic.
Yeah, it does do that.
Yeah,
but it's fun.
It works.
Yeah, it makes sense. Mm-hmm.
I love one of the fun facts about this movie is you ever notice that the monster's never fully seen on screen?
Yeah.
Do you know why that is?
Please,
monster.
You know, like the abortion baby monster thing.
Yeah.
The reason why it's never fully...
I'll cover your ears, Bunny.
The only reason why it's never seen... Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We got a pro-lifer in the house. So.
It's all right. I'm going to rollerblade out of here.
So apparently they ran out of money to finish the creature, so they just used what they had and just would shoot like that section of the monster.
So is it possible, just to give a little context, the monster in the movie appears like kind of an Oscar the Grouch out of this toxic waste can?
Pretty much.
So we're basically saying that monster was supposed to be full-bodied and not...
Yeah, it was supposed to be like a full-blown ass. By the way, speaking of abortion monsters, we saw a great movie the other day.
Oh, yeah.
The Suckling.
That's what made us want to do this pro-life month.
Yeah. Not seeing that movie.
The Suckling, again, it is a... And it's a similar theme. It is an aborted fetus that is flushed down the toilet. The toilet leads to a nuclear waste sewage drain. And it's basically... Imagine if Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was, instead of a turtle, it was an aborted fetus.
It should have been a trauma movie.
It should have been a trauma movie.
Aborted fetus.
No, it came out in like 89. Okay. I think it's 1990. It's so fucking good, because the logic behind it makes no sense. Because then, first of all, the abortion clinic is actually an illegal abortion house, because it's like some ramshackle house. Yeah. It's crazy. We should totally watch it.
Movie? Oh, shit.
I've never heard of this.
We should totally watch it. We should do Pro-Life Month.
Yeah. Maybe I've seen the cover, but...
The monster's great. No, I only made up... Because the monster in this movie is fantastic, and you can just totally tell they spent all the money on the monster, and then they forgot that they had to make the rest of the film.
I love that shit. That's one of my favorite parts of movie making, is like the things that come out just because they fucked up and they didn't have
enough. Well, Troma is famous for reusing a lot of the same props.
And scenes.
Yeah, and scenes. So the most famous one is like after the initial intro scene of this movie, which takes place at the nuclear power plant. By the way, did anyone track Mr. Paley as being okay, so I didn't even realize this before, but when I watched Class of Nukem High, when me and Mitzi were considering screening it, it had been many years since I had seen it. And as soon as I saw Mr. Paley, who is the guy who works at the nuclear power plant, the super...
Yeah. He's the mayor from Talk to Me.
For anyone that hasn't seen it, imagine...
He's in Street Trash.
Is it Laurel and Hardy? Yeah. Who's the guy out of Laurel and Hardy?
I think it's Laurel.
He's a Laurel,
yeah.
Yeah.
But he's also the guy who owns the car...
The junkyard in
Street Trash.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I didn't even realize
Who, by the way, died at 44 of a heart attack.
Really? Surprise. Get out of here.
Get out of town.
Wow, that shock and awe is what I'm experiencing right now with that information. Should we listen to some music?
Yeah, let's hear it.
So we should listen to some more Offspring? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah,
No, I'm just kidding.
What do we got from Class of Nukem?
I'm actually going to listen. We're going to listen to the theme.
Ninja Turtles.
I'm just trying to think of the best way to describe that man's shape.
Yeah, he's like.
Did we ever figure out who's playing at the? This was something I want to talk about.
Oh yeah, who was that band?
It's the Smithereens, I think.
That's the Smithereens.
Yeah, but like the.
Yeah, play that.
No, yeah, that's a pretty good scene.
Play the music from the damn movie.
I was going to keep it fucking relevant.
Wait, I wanted to talk to you guys about briefly why, or actually, no, I'm not going to ruin it. I want to ask Colt.
Yes.
I want to ask, without presupposing anything, have any of you been to a college / high school party where you're pretending that it is a beach party indoors.
Okay.
No.
No.
Me neither.
I know. I thought we were going to there's theme parties.
There's theme parties.
I've been to theme parties, but I've never been to an indoor beach theme
party. Okay, why was it such a fucking thing in the 80s? Because it's in, like, Real Genius, It's, like, it's in Porky's. It's in, like,
the logistics of getting the sand out of your house.
I think it was just an excuse to get see girls in bikinis. That's all it was.
I think it was like the same as the foam parties. Remember those?
Right. I think that was. So this is foam parties for the earlier generation.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. Got it. So in that scene, the Smithereens are playing.
Well, I was going to play the actual theme from Newfoundland.
No. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good song.
This is Ethan Hurt.
It's Newfoundland.
Ethan and the Coup.
Ethan and the Coup. This is a terrible song, but I kind of want to hear it anyway, so let's go. All right, Ethan Hurt, Newcomb High, let's go.
It plays the whole fucking movie.
The whole time.
Come high.
13 seconds.
What is going on?
Somehow, what's going on? Let me tell you what's going on. Basin Radio is what's going on.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? I think our chat is back.
Let's go.
All those people out there have been dying to chat with
us. Let's fucking go. Fecal urgency. Let's go.
I just wrote, maybe reload your browser. Reload your Firefox, Mozilla, Internet Explorer, Netscape.
Did you see Netscape?
Plug in, unplug the modem.
Yeah. Plug it back in. YouTube with, using Brave. There's no ads.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Use Brave if you can.
It doesn't work on my computer.
No, it doesn't. Okay. You can't talk to Pismo, but you can talk to us.
That's fair. So,
are you guys out there? You want to give me a little sign of your life?
Who the fuck is? I love Fecal Urgency. That's a great name, right there.
I love me some same.
Great. So do we.
That was during the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, where did we leave off? We left off. Oh, abortion.
No. We're past that. But there are some sexual undertones to Class of Nukem High. So basically, there's this guy. What's his name again? Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
And, Warren.
Warren, yes. Warren.
And he is really trying to have sex with his girlfriend, Chrissy.
Yeah.
Or at least all of his friends want him to.
Yeah.
Right. Because everyone else is fucking.
Yeah, in the movie.
Except for these two.
Yeah, so after the power plant scene where we find out something is afoot, there's a spillage that's happening.
Yeah.
And
I love that there was quite a few people working at the nuclear power plant who weren't wearing gloves. They had the full hazmat suits, but some of them were just straight up not wearing gloves.
That's true.
Pretty reckless.
But there's a lot of cavalier attitudes with radioactive waste.
I like that we opened basically on episode one of Chernobyl.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it'd be great if somebody did like a re-edit of Chernobyl and then just spliced in scenes from Nukem High.
There's so many shots that are just shitty version of Chernobyl.
If you had the Nukem High theme song playing over Chernobyl.
The entire series.
What's going on? Just like the person with their skin melting inside out. What's going on? So good.
It's like one of those things when you start playing on a computer, you can't close the computer until it's done.
Oh my God. It's going to happen. It has to happen.
Yeah, so beyond the catastrophic effects that this toxic waste spill is going to have on the neighboring high school, one of the sort of side plots is that it has leaked into the pot supply of the Cretans who are buying weed from a nuclear worker at the facility.
Right.
And they are going to sell this as an extra potent strain of weed called
Atomic Weed.
Atomic High.
Atomic High.
Yeah.
Which I believe is being grown at the power plant.
Right.
By the way.
It's being grown at the power plant.
Which, look, I don't know a lot about nuclear chemistry and science, but I don't think most things grow in nuclear toxic waste. Am I just wrong?
I don't know.
It's a weed. It grows in anything.
Yeah. Weeds grow in anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if we were to go to Chernobyl right now,
we get the strongest kush.
Yeah.
Indica or sativa?
Sensimilia. Doesn't matter.
That's fair enough.
But not only that, not only does it have this extra potent power, but it's also an aphrodisiac of sorts,
right.
Which is why Warren's friend Eddie wants to give it to Warren so that he can smoke weed with his girlfriend Chrissy and they can finally have sex.
Yeah,
right.
Finally.
Mm-hmm. At this weird indoor beach party.
And it's also to be said that if you smoke the weed, you change.
Right.
Because what was the gang?
The Cretans.
Who were the Cretans before they became the Cretans?
They were all like on the honor roll. The honor society.
So these are all the nerds.
I also like how they... their sexual prowess would lead some of the teachers to convert to a Cretan. Because I remember they made out, one the main Cretan made out with the German teacher.
Yeah, Miss Stein.
By the way, all of the faculty of this high school are from Argentina. Like, can we be clear about that? Like, there is a direct,
there's a Nazi vibe going on.
There is with the faculty.
There is straight up, first of all, let me just say, it's not just Nukem High. There is a lot of early trauma films has the Nazi sort of historical aesthetic running through there as part of the joke.
Yeah.
The '80s were a very different time.
I mean, makes sense. I mean, they're bad guys. Make them fucking Nazis.
Exactly. They were the most extreme. But it was weird because it was.
Well, you know what happened when Spielberg went away from that?
What happened?
He made Temple of Doom, the worst of the trilogy.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. He got it. The Nazis are the gold mine.
But here's the thing. I don't think Temple of Doom is the worst of the trilogy because of that. I mean, that's definitely a contributing factor.
Mm.
I think it's more due to the fact that both
Mitzi readjusted.
No, I think it's more due to the fact. And normally I would be in favor for this type of deviation in terms of like intention and spirit, but both. Spielberg and George Lucas, while before they even started making Temple of Doom, they went through really ugly, bitter divorces. Mm. And they were just filled with, like, misogynistic hate.
So they went from hating Nazis to hating women?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Hating women and hating lawyers. So they were just angry. They were just both filled with rage, and it led to making one of the
most culturally insensitive films.
Just mind-blowing. Like, if you watch it. And again, I think, granted, Spielberg definitely abandoned
his... Just so you know, there is no dish in India where little snakes are inside of a larger snake.
They don't serve... last time I checked...
I've been to a lot of Indian restaurants.
Yeah.
I've never been offered this dish.
There is no pregnant snake dish at Dante's Pizza. I can confirm this, because I've been there many times. Pakwan is a different story, but the pregnant snake at Pakwan is not there because it's on the menu. It just inadvertently will show up on your dish.
Due to
their lax sort of health code standards. So that's irrelevant. That's a different conversation.
It's a San Francisco dish.
It's more San Francisco. It's more San Francisco.
Not only do you get a snake, you get a snake that fucks.
Yes. But that's why I like Temple of Doom, because that's more just a product of racist rage, which George Lucas did not drop, because if...
That's why you like it.
Yes.
I think here's the problem I have with Temple of Doom. The gold mine of Temple of Doom is the short round indie relationship.
True.
Everyone knows that.
We all do.
And they don't give you enough of it.
No.
It holds back on it the whole film. And instead, what they force down your throat is Indy and what's her face?
Kate Capshaw,
which Capshaw, Jesus Christ, dude.
No.
If Spielberg wasn't playing favorites. And, you know, because him and Kate Capshaw are married.
They're married. They met on the set.
I'm not a big Spielberg guy, so I don't, I don't know too much his lore.
Yeah. I know about his lore because I need to know what to hate. when he went back to the Nazis, when he went back to the Holy Grail, you have my favorite of the trilogy,
Last Crusade over Raiders.
Only because I think the Last Crusade is like, it's Spielberg, I don't want to get too much into Spielberg, but it's him, like Temple of Doom, it's like, he's like, I'm going to do something darker, and in my opinion, he fails. It's just not in him. He can't do something darker. And then when he goes back to his Peter Pan adventure shit, he fucking nails it because that's what he's good at. And the set pieces and the elaborate... The intro to Last Crusade is my favorite moment in an Indiana Jones movie. And Indy's not even in it. It's River Phoenix.
It spawned a miniseries. Yeah. You got young Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
The train sequence is fucking brilliant. And Temple of Doom doesn't have one of those scenes.
Nah.
I don't know.
There's the scene on the bridge where he like pulls out his gun and it's funny.
I don't know. He's like,
sounds like a fortune cookie. The prequel is fucking stupid.
I think we can ascertain from.
Don't you think so? Why is it a prequel?
Spielberg falling
off. How did he get grumpier? Before he was Indiana Jones, he was grumpier before.
I think it's more that it's not so much that he's grumpier; it's just he was more racist.
Oh, okay,
he was way more racist.
The Nazis to make him more.
Yeah, humane. Yeah. He was like, it's like I'm a fucking racist. Whoa, these guys are really racist. I better ditch this.
I think it's more just having Sean Connery to bounce that off of as the main.
Well, here's the thing, Gil. I think my favorite thing
Connery
about...
fucking nails it on that movie.
The thing that I love about Last Crusade and The Rock is that both of those movies are unofficial James Bond sequels. That's all. I'm just saying. They're basically Bond sequels.
That was the most Greg Turkington thing I've ever heard you say.
Let's move on, because we're talking about Nukem High, not about Steven Spielberg. I don't know how we got there.
Unofficial sequel.
What? It is.
All right. All we can say is that bringing this back to Kaufman, the important part is that Nazis have a place in our society, and they are as villains.
Yes.
True.
Which Kaufman knows.
Yes. Although I think he's a Zionist.
Is he? Why you gotta ruin it?
Just saying.
Should we just stop the show now? Yeah. Never mind. We picked a Zionist film.
What was the other movie we were talking about?
Oh, Idle Hands. Yeah. You know who's not a Zionist? Rodman
Fendel.
Rodman Flender, Timothy Chalamet's uncle.
Are you sure?
100% positive.
Are we sure? We
will die on that hill.
All right. So, is there a point where these two lovers to be hook up and
yeah, they have sex because it makes them all sexy to smoke this weed.
Yeah, that's very true.
And then they have sex, and then she has the baby that turns into the monster.
Yeah, but it comes out of her mouth. Now, I'm not necessarily a gynecologist, but I'm pretty sure that if you have a miscarriage, it doesn't go out the mouth.
Okay,
I'm just saying.
My favorite is not necessarily a gynecologist. Like, there's a little bit of wiggle room there.
He has an interest in
I have an interest in gynecology. Have you been to Portland?
That sounds like a Star to Troma film. It's I have an interest in gynecology.
Well, anyway, since we have a little bit of time left, do we want to talk about the fact that the Toxic Avenger remake is coming out soon?
I was excited about the idea, but then I saw the trailer and I'm a little concerned.
Okay, so just help me out because I know nothing. What's the Troma Kaufman relationship?
It's just a reboot.
He's producing it.
He's producing it.
Okay.
I don't think it's an official Troma release though. I think it's a bloody disgusting release.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now here's the thing: the Toxic Avenger remake was actually completed like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was so fucking violent that no studio was like, we can't make any money on this. This is fucking crazy.
Okay.
But then
Terrifier came out,
and people realized, like, holy shit, people pay good hard cash to see somebody torn apart and shat on. Let's see what we can do with this Toxic Avenger movie.
It's a sign of the times.
Yes. Yeah. So that said, my apprehension towards it is I watched the Street Trash sequel.
Yeah, which I watched.
Which is awful.
Awful.
It's fucking horrible. Terrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. It was fucking awful.
They missed the entire point.
So much. And first of all, they made it in South Africa, and it looks like it was, there's no semblance of it being in Africa. Like, why the fuck would you even bother making it? Look, I know there's a lot
of South African sequels. Can we talk about how little anyone was asking for a Starship Troopers remake?
What?
Wait, there's a Starship
Troopers? Neil Blomkamp is doing Starship Troopers.
First of all, Neil Blomkamp is fucking awesome.
Like, no, I know, but like, he's like, does anyone think they can make a better film?
No one is going to make a better film.
Trooper?
No one will ever make a better Paul Verhoeven film of one of his films ever. It's impossible.
When I was reading about this news and I was thinking about our radio show, I was thinking about how shocked I am that you've never done a Paul Verhoeven imitation.
All right, let's see. So the thing is that you have to understand is that I can't fucking do it. I don't know what I can't.
You sound
the Dutch,
like a Nazi.
The Dutch accent. The Dutch accent. It's like you're too far south.
Go to north.
The Dutch accent sounds like Scottish and German had a stroke. I don't know how to do it.
You heard it here first, folks.
It's like you know, some people have to be born with certain teeth to play the French horn. It's the same thing with the Dutch accent.
You just don't have the teeth.
I don't have the teeth to do the Dutch accent. Yeah. I'm fairly certain there are people that are born in Holland who have the wrong teeth and they have a terrible Dutch accent.
Anyway, the only thing I heard from Neil Blomkamp about this was that he wants to make it more strict to the original story, and that he didn't think that Verhoeven's approach was heavy enough on the political satire.
What? That's fucking like, insane.
It's like a movie about fascism.
That's like saying Schindler's List isn't Jewish enough. That's fucking
like,
crazy.
Basically, Blomkamp saying it needs to be more of a trauma movie. Like, I can't think... If you go further than Verhoeven on Starship Troopers on the political satire side, you're making a fucking trauma movie.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, how do you do that?
Oh, man. I'm so glad we did Starship Troopers on the show.
I love it. God. Why?
A disaster.
Why?
Oh, wow. Very exciting.
Another remake era.
Yeah, yeah. Have an original idea, fucking Neil Blomkamp.
I was excited for his Aliens reboot.
Oh, was he doing
it?
Well, it was going to happen.
It was going to be Alien. It was basically Alien 3, David Fincher's Alien 3, like, never existed.
Oh, okay.
And they go right off of Alien.
And Sigourney Weaver was going to come back. And they even had sketches, and they had the costume outfits and everything.
It was going to be great. There was so much comic book lore to build on. Like, it was going to be amazing, and they killed it.
Yeah.
That's
a bummer.
Yeah.
Anyway, so next up, next week we're taking a break.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be out of town. I'm going to be in New Orleans scouting VHS tapes.
Yes.
And then the week after that, we're going to be at the Four Star Theater on Wednesday. Do you know the date,
Mitsu? April 23rd.
April 23rd at 7:30 p.m. We are screening Troll 2. It is fucking amazing. Take a journey to Nilbog with us.
Take a journey.
Have you guys seen, you've seen Troll 2, both of you?
Yeah, it's been a minute. Yeah. It's been a long while.
It's so fucking good.
I think I've seen the documentary about it.
Yeah.
More recently.
Well, you know a movie's good when they make a documentary
about
it. Yeah, the best worst movie.
Best worst movie.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
So please join us there. It's our final entry into our stoner horror theme.
And then we will follow up with a whole new month of programming in May.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be doing a shorter month in May as well.
Oh, and I had an idea for our zombie month.
What is that?
Oh, it's zombie month?
It's going to be a zombie month.
Mm.
Sometimes they run fast.
Ooh,
like that's a title. Good. Yeah,
that's a good title.
Yeah, sometimes they run fast. Mitsu likes it.
That's a good title.
Wow, that's a good title.
Oh, yeah,
I thought that was the title for one of the movies you were thinking about. That's a good fucking title.
That's also a good title for a movie.
Yeah,
thanks. Yeah, because sometimes they walk slow and sometimes they run fast.
What is that?
Sometimes they come back as the reference.
No. Stephen King, but that's, yeah.
Sometimes they run fast. That's
sometimes
good.
Sometimes they run fast.
That's pretty good.
Trademark that shit right now.
Yeah, so we're going to be showing a bunch of good stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe 28 Days Later. Hell maybe Burial Ground.
Maybe Return of the Living Dead.
Please do Return of the Living Dead.
It's a maybe.
It's happening. Thanks for joining us. Mitsu, take us out with some great music. I want to hear something almost as good as the Class of Nukem High theme.
So we're going back to Offspring?
Yeah. I mean, so we're going clearly. Back.
Pretty fly for a white guy.
All right, folks. We'll see you now. We'll see you soon.
Can we just talk about really quickly that a fifth entry of Nukem High came out in 2017.
There's a fifth? I only knew of the three.
Yeah, it came out in 2017. I've never seen it. That's the only one I haven't seen.
Well, we gotta
it's
watch
called
it.
Return to Nukem High. A.K.A. Volume 2.
I love it.
Do they ever figure out what's going on?
No, they don't.
But wait, we got a call. Do you have a call?
No,
never mind. It's someone else.
Okay, great. All right, folks. We'll see you soon. Thanks for listening.
Good night.
Bye. Are you playing music?
chance, well, she really did. Still, she dropped out and had a couple of kids. Marcel isn't home because he's got no job.